supposed to try and plot some kind of consultation time with NCOP counterpart colleague to review the MPRPA as we forwarded to them last time when we passed it through the National Assembly. We have agreed now that those small amendments that they were supposed to look into, they will send them to the department to rectify. So they were not amendments, they were errors, which I announced during the National Assembly. They said that therefore they think that they are meeting with them today, and so they will tell them that they must go and rectify those amendments. Check if the department has done those technical errors, rectify those technical errors accordingly. In fact, there are no technical errors, index error. Technical means another. So then we will have to find some time. I don't know how the department is going to do that, but as soon as I take a cough, and we have to then pass it over back to.
I told them about it.
But over and above, also we will have here to there is also a small here is not, this one is not an index error, it's a technical error, which we have to we the committee afterwards the state law advisors and parliamentary law advisors to come and assist. We will have to just spare about 10 minutes to look into that, because that is the bill that we're debating tomorrow. It has got a very serious technical error, which without amendment and adjustment from this house is going to cause a lot of inconvenience in what we want to be wanted. So we will have them here, we'll discuss that. Should be today, because we don't have another time. So we just want to find out from them all the procedural going about. Otherwise, I think we can then allow. So in other words, about MPRPA, what as they had asked to meet with us, so there will be no longer any need because they are meeting. They said they wanted to meet with us yesterday before they meet with the department today. But I did explain exactly what happened there. So they said then they are going to take it back to the department so that they correct those errors. And then the bill, because of the Section 75 bill, is going to still come back to us. And then we will satisfy ourselves that the department has done those corrections. And then we can send it back to them. So that's where we are. About the man health and safety, I think we're still on course. But we had we discussed with the chief inspector yesterday, trying to find time. I think this is the third announcement, to find time how to make it possible to finish our sheet off, to wind it off by the end of this week. It seems there are some problems because I have some members like Honorable Lucas who are having their party engagements on Friday, and there are problems therefore tomorrow, because tomorrow we also have our own problem. There's a three-line week tomorrow afternoon, morning, because the caucus, there's no way that we can do any justice. And today, the whole day is also as busy as that. Right up to some very group late in the evening, up to about 8 or so today. But in discussing with one of the whips last night here, he said that in any event, whatever the reason was, it was just a futile exercise for us to try and finish this bill this week, because this is the only thing. It and tomorrow. If the Mexican which will approve the same bill will only be in September. So there is no point, therefore, in cutting our heads. We can finalize it next week. We will have all that time. Because in any event, even if we can finalize it this week, it will still be only finalized in September. The only thing which is next for looking into the bills will be, I think, mid-September. So therefore, I said that I will announce, therefore, that you must ask. Be then steady, look into this bill thoroughly, have our time, and put all things together that we want them put there. We don't have to press our heads about the study group that I was talking about, that you have to appear this evening, and there's no point. We can appear next week and discuss all the other things that you want to discuss, and whatever. So, in other words, therefore, we will just move in the correct pace as we go through enough time. Until, in fact, what we need to do as a committee, we need to start next week finalizing, working on the last bill, which is a collective waste management bill, so that then we finish with this bill, we know that we have done with them, then we push them in, and we are ready to debate both of them in September when the next meeting comes. I think that's how we're going to work on that. So for now, then, take your time, present to us any problems. We will find time for them to deal with them when the time allows. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. What we have done was to look at the record of the discussions yesterday and lifted the issues where there were concerns, noted those concerns, and articulated how we think are dealt with or can be incorporated in the bill, and that's what we will be presenting, and probably followed with discussions on that. Circulated the presentation which covers the topics we'll be discussing. Yesterday in our presentation, particularly section 55, concerns were raised around the maximum limit fine set. Minimum imposed, not having a minimum, but
Honorable, can you just come and help me and share? I just want to discuss with the board by the chair.
No, I'm going to go over.
It's not that I'm going to tell you.
Keep it bad.
Hey, you are under the bar, man.
Yeah, because I'm phoning the manager. I've got his name. I'm going to call him.
That's a new.
Take out the bed.
Thanks. It's harness. It's not me.
I'm very sorry.
Thanks, Chair. I'm Thabo Gazi, Chief Inspector of Mines.
Selima Kova, Legal Advisor of the Department. In the same principle, Inspector of Mines.
Catherine Dams, Director Legal Services.
Seems to me every time we have a new chairman we've got to introduce ourselves. Hendrik Schmidt, member of the committee.
Tembo Mahlaba, member of this committee.
Denny Kekana, member of this committee.
Anas Komrak, ANC member of this committee.
Thanks, Jen. Yesterday in the after presentation and deliberation, the committee raised concerns around Section 55, where the proposal was to impose a maximum fine of R1 million for non-compliance. And the concerns were that there's no minimum fine set. We've had discussions about it, but the feeling was that we need to seriously look at at what can be done. And really, when you look at the standard practice internationally and locally where this type of things are applied, even in court, the standard is really just to provide for a maximum. And I think I raised it yesterday that the intention was really to deal with the matter through a guideline. But because there was a feeling that the need for setting a minimum, we were proposing to add that in session at the bottom that says depending on the size. And that's really a reflection of the complexity of adding the minimum to this type of thing. We have a very varied mining industry, starting from artisanal mining, quarrying, medium-sized, big operations, and in dealing with them, you really need to be proportional. The actions you take need to be proportional to the size and the actions. So effectively what we said is that depending on the size of the operation, a minimum of 10,000 or 100,000 will be included as the committee requested. And then the next issue was there was a concern raised around investigation in Section 11.5. One concern was around the scope. What does that investigation really cover? I think the Honourable Mr. Mahlaba raised questions around what is the content of that report? It's not spelled out. And in really addressing that, when you look at the current Act, Section 11.5d, it talks to the content of the report, investigating, establishing the root causes, failures in procedures that led to the accident, and coming up with recommendations to correct the situation. So really, we think that earlier provision, Section 11.5d, adequately deals with the scope of the investigation report. And then there was also a strong feeling that after an accident, the operation needs probably an inception or consideration of inception that stops the operation until an investigation is done. And when we look at the current provisions, I mean, that's been to some extent the practice, because Section 54 empowers inspectors to take those decisions. Inspectors have been doing that where there was a major accident and there are problems that stopped operations. In fact, that's one of the reasons probably why health and safety had such a media coverage in the last year or so. They stopped operation, requested management at a particular site to conduct, you can call it investigations, we call them assessments of what led to the failure and what are they going to do about it. And they would come and present before they are allowed to continue. So that's really the current practice. And it's also catered for in the regulations, where it stipulates that after an accident, that site will be left untouched, cordon off, until an inspector arrives on site. If the inspector doesn't arrive within three days, then only then can the management, if it interferes with their work, continue with the operation. So you think that concern is adequately addressed in the current legislation? And then the next one was Section 20. There was concern around dismissal of employees when they are found unfit, without looking at how you can integrate them in the working place. People are just dismissed, sent back home, and to struggle in their community. What we've done here, we inserted a section that basically stops employers from dismissing employees until an appeal has been finalized, because that's a provision. In case there's an appeal, you cannot necessarily. And I think it's a fair practice. We do it under the fine. I think in the employer submission with regard to fines, they put a very substantial argument against having to pay a fine when they have appealed. So basically, because they have appealed, it will suspend the payment of the fine. And we thought it's a similar principle. So when there's an appeal, because if an appeal comes and say that worker is fit, which has happened in many cases, then it becomes a problem if he's terminating employment to employ the worker. So that has been addressed. And I've also highlighted yesterday internally in the department, we've developed a policy document which we're currently working with at the council level to see how we incorporate it in our current legislative framework that deals with disability management, standard practice around the world, mining operations, where if an employee is injured, the employer takes responsibility together with the unions or employee representatives in the operations to look at alternative employment or reintegration with the worker in the work environment. And some operations are doing it already, although it's not a legal requirement. I visited one operation where injured workers who maybe lost their limbs or whatever, they have established effective on ground that makes back, which they use to carry explosives. So there's alternative work that can be arranged instead of just sending the injured employee home to suffer. And then Section 10, there was an issue raised concerning, because from the public comments we got and public comments that came to the committee, the overall comments from the industry was that we need to talk about formal training, because there's a lot of training, even informal training, that takes place. And the section can prove to be onerous, as it was crafted the way it was crafted. And there was a request to include the expression formal training to address the concern that was raised, or that led to the requirement record keeping. And that we've done. I think the committee was more concerned about formal and informal training. What is formal and informal training? So the current section would basically read that formal training is required in terms of Section 10, subsection 2. Because that section requires employers to assess the risk where they expose people, train people in how to deal with those problems, and have refresher training in place even if they are away when they come back. So that's the record of training that is required in terms of that section. So we can do that there. And there was also a concern. Because the current practice, I mean, employers, I think the Act, the way it stands, it assumes that at operations, CEOs are appointed. He simply talks about the role of CEOs. We had an earlier session, I think, that said their name. It was really out of consideration of small scale mining, where sometimes they don't necessarily have a CEO. He's the owner, he's the employer, and he runs the operations, the manager, and everything. So the section was just saying the employer may, but the general feeling was that you're giving discretion. And so we've left it as it is. All the requirements was just to say, inform us who's the CEO and the responsibilities of the CEO is carried, so that when there are problems, we know who to interact with. And section 11.5, the requirement to submit an investigation report by the employer raised a lot of concern, really. Here we're demonstrating how we dealt with it. I explained it a bit yesterday, because Section 60 requires inspectors to conduct investigations. Inquiries is a must where somebody dies, and it makes provision or leaves discretion, may conduct investigations where there was a serious accident. And when we look at the levels of injuries we have in our sector currently, I mean, if you look at last year's figure, a year, almost 4,000 injuries. So, in all fairness, there's no way to be able to conduct all those investigations. So the requirement here, what we were really seeking to achieve was to get employers, because legislation in terms of 11 parts, they have to do all investigations anyway. And the intention was to get the report of those investigations, which we haven't conducted. And with the idea that, I mean, some of these accidents, it may be an industry-wide problem. And you learn of this problem and then you can deal with it, so that you don't have to see incidents right across the industry. But the general comment was that you're exposing people to criminal... What is it? Incriminating themselves in giving the report, because you have these powers, you can issue fines, you can recommend prosecution, and here legislatively you're supposed to give you the report. So what we've done here, instead of saying the employer must, we've made provision for principal inspector to request those reports, because it's not every report. That will be required. And then for those reports that are requested, we provided indemnity that was requested. And it's important to note here that if you don't get those reports, you never know anything about them anyway. So you're bringing in knowledge that you operate without it. So we've made that concession, and it really relates to that question. And then if you were to say you can't make that concession, we'd be worse off. In fact, we're better off with this section, because we are able to know what is happening and prevent incidents from taking place. And then there was a comment, I think, on section 13, appointment of occupational medical practitioners, and that's how it has been addressed. When the Act was promulgated in 97, it made provision for general practitioners to deal with occupational health issues at mines. And therein lies a particular problem. The challenge was, at that time, we didn't have qualified occupational practitioners in the country. It's been 10 years since the Act was promulgated, and we think they are enough practitioners to deal with it. The problem, the issue of occupational health is a big problem for us. I think a week or two ago there was some report released talking about silicosis, and the investigator was actually making an assertion that a number of people killed because of occupational health problems is much, much more exceeds the number of accidents. but it's something you don't see, and so there's not much debate around occupational health that, but they do occur. They occur, and we think it's important that qualified professionals deal with those particular problems to protect the health of workers at mine sites and operations. And then the section 59, I think it was it was really an error, the deletion of section 59 that allows individuals who have been subjected to a fine to appeal. I think that really covers the main issues that came out of the deliberations yesterday and how we thought to address them.
All the questions which are addressed here are raised by members. And the members can engage with the responses. Thank you, Chairperson. Can we go to the first slide response? I'm looking at the proposed resolution there, especially at the last section that says, depending on the size of the operation, a minimum of 10,000 or 100,000 will be included. Maybe if we could have included the magnitude of the incident, because if there are 20 people who have been killed, even if it could be a small operation, how do we deal with it? Because the operation itself, to me, it would not be important. Because immediately you look at the operation, you're looking at the profit, you're trying to ascertain how much money is made. But you lose sight of the damage that could have been caused. If you look at the issue of the traffic fine, you'll find that most of the time, the traffic cop, he just takes out the book. The book tells him how much you charge for whatever offense. And you'll find that in terms of the fine, it depends. If it's just an indicator that is not working, it's taken as a minor problem. But if it's a major problem, you'll find that it becomes more steeper. Now, I'm looking at this, looking at saying that because the big company, you're going to charge them more because the big company, even if it's an indicator, but you start looking as to how big is the company. Immediately start looking how big is your company before I'm finding you. You will lose sight of the situation at hand. I know that immediately people are hearing that there's been a death. We'll always expect that harsher sentences will be passed. It's like even in the court. Immediately there's death, everyone will be opening their eyes to see what sanction will be given. But if it's a minor thing, then it is understandable. That's the first one. Maybe I want to check, because we're all aware that it's not easy to always come and make amendments. You'll find that it may take another 5 years unless it's a very compelling remark that needs to be sorted out. But I want to check, are you happy with the scope? The current scope under, I think this is, the current scope of investigation that is outlined, are you happy with the scope itself, seeing that there's been no remark to say maybe we need to include other things as part of the reporting in terms of the investigation?
And the other one is, when do the inspectors come in? If the employer has got to do those investigations, starting within a certain number of days, he must start, let's say 10 days, he must start, within 10 days he must start his investigation, of which it should be completed within 30 days. But I'm looking at when would the inspector fit in? Could it be the same day of the accident or incident? Or it's just open? It depends on whether the press has found it, probably whether is it drawn some interest in the public. And the last one is the proposal to suspend the dismissal pending the appeal has been incorporated. I would have loved to hear as to how it has been crafted. Instead of us waiting until you just saying that it has been incorporated, but we don't even have it structured as to how is it going to be included, rather than arguing it in the last moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Only three issues. The one is, if I understand it correctly, I just want to ensure that the exit of an employee, is that directly linked in terms of medical injuries or injuries sustained during his employment? Is that directly linked with his or her exit medical checkup? In other words, in most instances, I suppose, if someone is medically injured, severely injured, it wouldn't necessarily be necessary. But sometimes, you know, I've had an incident where someone was complaining he bumped his head in the dark against the pipe, and that caused him a neck operation, which caused him to be, losing his job in terms of being dismissed from his employer. So in that instance, it is not quite clear whether, you know, the injury caused the dismissal, which he's complaining of, or whether there was other issues. What I'm basically asking is, if someone exits or is dismissed for medical reasons, shouldn't his dismissal definitely be linked to an exit medical checkup? In other words, you can't come back later and say, I've been injured, or whatever the fact may be. It must be linked. Also gives substantiation for the employer saying, I've had the medical exit checkup and he has been found on such a way around. Maybe it is so at the present moment, I'm not sure. So could you clarify that? Then, secondly, the department has a right to investigate the affairs of the incident or the circumstances of an incident. Does the department have a right during the conducting of an investigation by the employer, which within now happens within certain time frames, to say, I want to be part of this initial investigation? Because I can imagine certain instances where, let's say, a mine accident happens today and there's 50 people who've died. I'd rather have a report, credible report, as soon as possible than having it open for the employer having a report issued, and then the department saying, I'm not happy with the report, I want to be part of that process. Shouldn't one have the double opportunity of saying, I want to be part of the initial investigation because of the magnitude of the importance of the issue? In other words, you can keep an eye as to what's happening, because I would suggest that trying to conduct that investigation on your own without the cooperation of the employer can be very difficult. You need access to the records, you need entry to the mines, access to the particular sites or workplaces. So I would rather have both there with the right, you don't need to be there, but with the right to demand that you be part of that initial investigation, because then it's shortly after the incident and you will then form part of the whole process. That's a question. And then lastly, it's much easier saying I will impose a fine. And you should notice, say, I impose a fine of R1 million on you. But, you know, It's more difficult when lawyers and senior counsels and advocates come marching into your door saying, on basis of section 721CCD, you have missed something in this. You know, all I'm saying is, is your process, your checks and balances in terms of notices been scrutinized to such an extent where it is practically effective to issue a notice, not nominally in terms of I may issue a notice and therefore a fine and therefore go through the motion, but as the issue of let's say sometimes intentionally or unintentionally not jeopardizing the process but the procedure leads to practically a parlomen, what's a parlomen? A paralyzing of the process. Basically, sorry, can't get to the word this morning. Just those three issues.
Are you trying to say, for instance, that you need some kind of a procedural mechanism of leading to a fine, or is that what you are saying?
No. What I'm basically saying is, you know, I understand that the department has had the right to issue fines, which is fine. But then comes the legal representatives, and it becomes a long, drawn-out issue, and a fight eventually landing up the director general or the minister's office or whatever the fact may be. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong. All I'm saying is it doesn't help you have the ability to impose a fine, and it's subject to 10,000 criteria and conditions. And is the imposition of a fine practically implementable and practically enforceable? If not, then I understand that a part of this process in having this amendment bill is not really being addressed, because you need, when a mine has clearly overstepped the mark, the ability to say, you've overstepped the mark, I've been part of that investigation, if you do agree to it initially, and impose a fine. And be enforced within reasonable time. That's all I'm asking.
Unfortunately, yesterday you came a bit late. We gave them a number of options yesterday about that, because we were concerned. Actually, they were part of the people who raised that. As it is at the moment, it's very difficult to impose penalties, because if you go to court, takes a long processes of procedures of courts and appeals and everything. At the end, the matter dies away. And so we as a committee, we suggested, we gave some options that we said they must go and look into, part of it was that, how about an option first, one option which would make the companies wake up was that if there is an accident, which is procedural, so if there is a car accident, cordon off the area, and no movement within that cordon off area, and though no operations until the matter is sorted out there, and a report has been given what has happened, what caused the problem. That was one option we gave them. The second option was that some kind of a special tribunal, which would be the same as the one that are put by the road traffic thing at the side of the road to have a special magistrate that try a person, impose a fine, pay them. We gave them a number of options, so which we expected actually to do when they come back, they were addressing what they thought when they sat down, you know, and put together their minds. But we did exactly say that. Anything which is if we have an act, in fact it came from them, if we have an act which has no safeguard for implementation and reinforcement of that implementation, then it is useless. So which is, I think that's where you are. And I think that's part of what they are supposed to address us today. I was outside, so I'm sorry if I have not noticed members. It's Comrade and then from Honorable.
not raise your hand if you want to talk.
I just want to make sure. You say on your first slide, you say 10,000 or 100,000. So I just want to make sure which one it is. Or are we going to use both?
Depending
what are you meaning by this?
Depending on the size.
Yeah, but then it comes to my next question. Are you having any measures to make sure what is the type of a
operation?
Of a company? Are there any guidelines what you're using to make sure how big is this company? Because it's easy to lie to you and say to you, well, I'm only at a turnover of 100,000, but maybe my turnover was then a billion, something like that. So, what are you using to make sure how big is the operation?
Are you through?
Yeah.
Okay, not yet.
I'm sorry, I've missed this during the shortage.
I miss a point because I was not there yesterday when the briefing was given. So I use my natural wisdom to make few interventions. I'm just trying to check here on the, just make a follow up on the figures. And then event, if you find when there's an accident, what accident is it, and while people get injured, it's physical injury, and there are people who get traumatized. What measures are there to deal with post-traumatic stress? Because you see, physical injuries in car accidents, people concentrate on the physical effects. But when people are stuck in a mine for 12 hours, 24 hours, even if they survive, their life is no longer the same. It's no more. So what do you do to resolve those issues? But in terms of the figures, it's important because you see, at 10,000. Even if the size, you see a mine, we deal with a mine. Even if the size is small, 10,000 is not a figure. It's not money. 100,000 is not money. If you say minimum fine is 1 million, you start to talk about money. Get my point? You can look at the prices with the accident fund. How are they getting reviewed? People think that 160,000 rand per annum is money for a person who went into a car accident. It's not money, because that money is going to pay your lawyers in the trust. When they represent you, they suck the money up until you are left with no money. So I'm just saying that when those figures are worked on, it's important to know what the real money is, because there are also possibilities that your economy can slide into an economy of Zimbabwe. So you have to talk about real figures and real money in terms of the challenges facing South Africa today. So that's a point I just wanted to raise, so that I get education. Thanks.
Because I wasn't around, I think I'm not also answering. I think something is strange. The resolution that you are talking about, there was a content. The content is from the committee, and the resolution is what you read out. So what is the resolution?
They are applying their minds. They are responding.
Responding, yeah. So your response after our concern for this fine, you change it, because initially you had 1 million. Now I see 10,000 and 100,000. What is it?
I think the concern from the committee was the minimum. The maximum was 1 million, and I think the committee said if you have a maximum, you must have a minimum. And that's what we're seeking to address. And I think when I've presented, and the questions that members are raising, very important questions. But they really touch the difficulty of setting a minimum. Because that's the point that, standard sections, even in the court, just set a maximum. We have a very varied industry. I mean, in other countries, you will have different legislation for different sectors. I mean, recently I went to Queensland. They have an act dealing with coal, an act dealing with metalliferous. Now, in this country, we have an act that covers the whole mining sector, and it creates a problem. And that's why the way it's written, it's a process-driven legislation, which is not a problem in applying. But when you're dealing with legal sanctions, it's a problem because you really have to have guidelines of how you deal with different sizes in the sector. There's no way you'd be able to deal with them in a one-size-fits-all fashion. But one of the issues I'd like to raise, I think members lean fines to death, and therein lies the difficulty. Because, I mean, these fines are issues for non-compliance. There's nothing to do with death. When people are dead, those are court matters. We can't issue a fine for somebody's death. If it's a serious injury, it's a court matter. Fines are issues for non-compliance. I have a principal inspector here from the Northern Cape, a region infested, if you like, with small scale mining. And I was the principal inspector there. Some of these operations, you give them a fine of 5,000, they can't afford it. So as a farmer who got a license, then those mining inspector doesn't make much money. So those are practicalities. And we thought the best way of dealing with them would be to prepare guidelines. In fact, the current practice has been, we had what we call 14 deadly sins. You know, if small operations, for example, what really injures people there is unguarded machines. You know, the pool is running the flow card. If you go to a small operation, then you find that you issue them a fine. You know, fines are really linked to non-compliance, and it's very important to grasp that, because then it takes away this whole issue of quantum and when people die.
But let me disturb you there. Yesterday, when we were dealing with this, actually, I mean, not yesterday, throughout, since we started dealing with it, I think we members here, there was a lot of input from members saying that 1 million is not enough for life, for a lost life.
Mm-hmm.
So members throughout the period, as we are now categorizing, we were simply talking, in fact, most particularly, members were talking about injuries and death, mortality, rather than compliance. And members were saying here, we can't value life even at million. How do you value life at million? So which means that members have been understanding that this entails actually the amount of compensation for that, for compliance. And so it's another category that probably needs to be reopened. If now we have two categories that we have to discuss, that separately as court matters. Because that's why the evidence says we need to find a way of dealing with these special tribunals, whatever we call them, so that we are able to get the reinforcement of what we legislate.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think I should have clarified it much earlier. But the way our law is written, it's a serious injury to the death. I have to speak to the Director of Public Prosecution and refer the matter there. You can't deal with it in terms of fines. Fines are really just imposed for non-compliance. If an inspector goes, he finds that there was supposed to be support, there was no support, and in that instance he may issue a fine or something, but it's not really for that. It's not compensation. Because then if it becomes compensation, it's really what value do you place on a human life? So it's not compensation for the death nor the injury. It's really just a fine for non compliance. And then
Yes. Chairperson, whilst we are on the same point, because I can see that I would come back and ask the same, put a follow up, having already addressed the question.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that these non compliances sometimes lead to death. Now, if it so happens that death has occurred, and on investigation, there's proof that there was non compliance. That you did not find because there was no inspection that was done. Let's say the inspectors would do rounds as and when necessary. But you find that an accident has taken place and there's proof that there was non-compliance. To me, my understanding is that immediately you pose that sanction, you can't just say, no, the court will deal with it. Even if in your own investigation you find that there was non-compliance which led to the incident and death occurred. That's why I'm worried that whilst we know that that fine is not going to go and replace the person who's dead, but we are saying employers must be able to say, instead of me losing R1 million in a financial year, I'd rather comply and spend this R500,000, because if any death takes place, I might lose R1 million. It will force them to say, let me repair my car instead of getting the tickets and lose R1,000 instead of just buying the globe and put it in. These are some of the rationale behind looking into some of these things. And on the other hand, there's this issue of when we talk about small, we can't be representing people who are saying they are making money. I don't think there could be somebody who can say I'm a miner and is making R1,000 a month. I'm not sure how do we say they're small? How small is small? And couldn't it be possible that because of the machinery that was not guarded or something, then the person will not be, if you find that it's not guarded, you'll start saying, oh, you must pay R200 because you are a small miner. And yet if you look at the potential of disaster by not looking at that, because definitely you can't say you are in an operation, but you cannot meet all the necessary precautions for safety.
And probably here the law advisors can advise or assist us, because if yes, through our investigation it has led to death, we refer the matter to the court, and people can pursue civil liabilities. The legislation deals with health and safety. It's, we cannot impose compensation on people's death through a social regulation like health and safety law. So there are remedies in the whole legal system. The intent of this legislation is to secure compliance to health and safety. And we'll really be entering into conflicting with other governmental establishments if we start imposing compensation for that in the health system.
I think this is better. I'm very sorry. It looks like it's not the language. You see, he has read. I think Honorable Mashaba has really reminded us correctly what exactly we have been discussing. All these things with you being part of us. I would be very much suspicious if you were not looked by someone now that you've changed. Because we're talking, in fact, technically, yes, Mashaba has even corrected us, because even myself, I nearly made a mistake to say that we are finding that. In fact, we're finding a non-compliance with that. That is what we're discussing throughout this period. That any non-compliance that leads to this, that, and that is why there was this argument of R1 million against a dead body and so forth. We were talking specifically that the R1 million that we're imposing were about non-compliance, which at times lead to death. But then it depends. standing, you said there is a range, as you call the maximum, that from a million, depending what type of compliance, of non-compliance it was, then you report necessary, but you were having up until now, up to 200,000, and now you've increased it up to a million,
to court.
You see, and members are still feeling that it is low, if there is no minimum, it all remains therefore at the discretion of you to judge people differently according to how they lobby you. You see, that is what we said. But all of us, we were talking about non-compliance, not about courts. We even said that the problem that you are having, as a matter of fact, is when matters have to go to court, because these are very prolonged cases that end up really first, they are costly for the department, and secondly, they end up not really addressing what you want, to meet. These are the matters that we're discussing. We can now change and discuss the totally different scenario. When we sent you yesterday, we were all at par that all that you'll be doing, you'll be looking into the maximum and the minimum, and you told us all the frustrations that we even said. These frustrations that you're talking about, that included actually that whole process of court taking a long time, and that whole process of implementation being a problem because you are under-resourced financial-wise. That's part of what you said. That's part of what also you said, that you have a problem even of care. That's part of what you were saying. So there are many whole range, and all these things, you may think that these are part of the problems of being able or of being unable to reinforce even the regulations that that's what we're discussing. It's not about compliance and non-compliance. So we can't change today and discuss totally a new topic from what we're discussing, because you were only supposed to go and address these issues in terms of compliance relative to fines, monetary, or other means possible, including closing the, what was put forward here, including closing. That is why I'm reminding Honorable Smith that we did make all these options yesterday, and we were today expecting to come and listen to you having refined them. We even made, I remember in my long, long address, I even referred to how we've dealt with the energy bill to do all these kinds of things. That probably we need to have something like that, combine all these things, get all the complex, get everything locked up so that in future we don't have these problems of financial problems, skills problems, everything. I think that's what we discussed.
Yeah, I think this matter of fines, I will really take you from the committee, because definitely for us, we've looked at the practical difficulty we're facing in implementing it, and if what we propose is not adequate, I think we'll take directly from the committee. I'd like to
so we are afraid to come with you, but something has gone wrong. You are now very scared about very militant about this thing. Today you are very scared, I'm sure you have been warned.
No, okay, I'm trying to explain the technicalities, and I don't feel that we're talking about the same thing. That's why I'm saying.
But yesterday you were talking about the same thing. No more. Okay, fine. I think today you are very exhausted. I think you underwent a very fat grilling last night. We must have seen this man. He was very, he was militant yesterday. We said, he is a frustrated person. He wants things done. Today has changed very soft. It doesn't matter anything. He said, it is up to us. Why did I tell you? Well, I had a bargain in bed. Yeah, my Matabo, let's hear the members, and let us disperse. We know yesterday what he wanted, but we know today what he must have wanted.
Now, Chairperson, you know, we're trying to help the department here to have kids to fight, because they can see that things are not working as they would have expected. If they've got targets and they're not met, it means that they are our own legislation, which they will always say we couldn't do anymore. We've dealt with all the incidents and accidents in terms of the legislation that we've provided. So the first people that should be blamed is us, if they will follow the letter of the law. And it means we have set the standards to a friendly position rather than to make people think twice before they make mistakes. Now, my feeling is that if they are going to take the cue from us, on the other hand, they serve here as our advisors. We can take decisions, but only to find that later on we even challenge constitutionally. So they are also our advisors. We need to work together to make their lives more easier. They will not succeed. If they were to be paid according to the performance of this nature, they would have a problem. That means for the past 2 or 3 years, they have not been getting performance bonuses if these things were taken into account, that there is no decrease in the debt in this sector. But I'm looking at the fact that sometimes it's because we don't even have statistics of the incidence of non-compliance. If they would have also told to us to say this is what they've dealt with, maybe to me it reads as if, no, in fact, everybody complies. So that's why they don't seem that much geared towards being expressive in this legislation that we're putting up. That maybe there's no problem, there's not much of a problem. But we would have determined that if they would have put to us to say, these are the non-compliance they've dealt with over the years. If they say, no, we've only dealt with 5, maybe we'll start asking why. They'll say, no, we don't have sufficient inspectors, so we've not been doing much inspection. Because they are non-compliant, they will only find it if they've been to the mine for them to do their routine checks. If they don't do their routine checks, that's why you will always hear of deaths, because they are thin on the ground, they can't implement and monitor the conditions in the different mines because of their size. But on the other hand, they may take it as if it's one of the miner. But I can see that they want to take it seriously. But on the other hand, they also feel that we're becoming too harsh. I think we need to have a session on this one alone. And probably if they can bring the statistics, they can tell us better. As what type of non-compliance are we talking about? Is it something that could have been seen by the management of the mine and the supervisor, and nothing was done about it? But I'm also worried, Chair, that if there's death, then they wash off their hands and they say, no, the court will take care of it. Because it's what they're saying, that if there's death, they refer it to the public prosecutor to deal with it. But in-house, because even in any employment, there is civil side of things, but in the work field, you are dealt with and you are sometimes even suspended. Whilst the court will still also take its own course, I'm not sure why would we have a situation where if you investigate, you find that there was non-compliance, but just because the court will take care of it, then you leave it out. I think instead, we need to even say that maybe we need to up the maximum, so that even if when somebody goes to court, you know, the 10,000 rand, the execution of the 10,000 rand might even be 15,000 rand to execute the 10,000 rand, which is the minimum that is written there. The employee who's got to investigate and do all the paperwork to enforce the 10,000 might even be more. I'm looking at the amount of effort put in to deal with that against the amount that will end up being imposed.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to follow on from where the last speaker left, because quite right, Mr. Chair. I think, you know, I was quite impressed yesterday to see some improvement in terms of the facts and the figures relating to especially the number of incidents related to fall of ground machinery and transportation mining incidents. I think we asked last year for a more detailed rundown, so we've made progress. But I think there's a lot more progress which could be made in terms of the proposal just made in terms of non-compliance. I know we're working on mine. I'm not sure what the non-compliance could consist of. I have a bit of a problem, and I wasn't here for the whole meeting, you say, with a minimum. Because I can see that in certain instances, your non-compliance might be ranging from not having a fire extinguisher in the office to having a door of a cage not closing and people could fall down. You know, the one would warrant a 5,000 rand fine, I suppose, and the other one would warrant a 1 million rand fine or 2 million rand fine because the cage door is not closing. So I think it's a bit problematic in my point of view by including a minimum, because if you don't have a fire extinguisher in your office and it's an Anglo-American, then you can't go finding the minus 1,000. So what you're basically doing, you're excluding that kind of non-compliance, because are you going to find Anglo-American 100,000 rand for not having a fire extinguisher? I'm asking that by virtue of the most bizarre circumstance. So I think the discretion should be with the mine inspectors, because he has seniors to which he has to report. So I would rather not have a minimum, personally speaking. But the maximum is fine. You know, you can even increase the maximum. It accommodates all possible phases of non-compliance. But on one issue I'd like to ask is, the Workman's Compensation Commissioner basically compensates people for injuries at work and deaths, if I understand correctly. The National Director of Public Prosecution the death must be reported to the police, must be an investigation, there must either be a criminal a prosecution, or there must be a inquiry, and there's no latitude in that regard. Either or, one of the two or the other, and then fine. So I'm not sure whether anything else comes to the equation. That basically seems to be fines, non-compliance, workman's compensation for deaths and injuries, which are workman's compensation, not the mine, not the department administrate. So the fine itself is only for purposes of non-compliance, cage doors, fire extinguishers, whatever the fact may be, and National Director of Public Prosecution, then the criminal prosecution. Is there any other, in that big framework, other role players having an input as to negligence or failure to comply with statutory duties or rights, or whatever the fact may be? I'm just trying to get the whole picture. I think part of that picture was, like the previous speaker said, we don't know what the non-compliances are. We don't know what the fines have been. We don't know how many matters have been taken on appeal. And for us to really assist you, we need to know these facts and where the problems lie.
Thanks, Jess, and thanks. I'd like to thank the Honourable Mr. Smith, because that's what I was saying. It probably didn't come out in the manner that it was intended. That information can certainly be made available. The number of fines issued, the non-compliances, we can look at a report and try and lift the level of the number incidences of non-compliance. And I think what will also be helpful is the presidential audit on mine safety. The report has been finalized. And probably when the committee looks at it, they will talk in detail about the non-compliance at mine. The one question covered the scope. I think Honourable Masawa asked about the, are we happy with the scope of the report in terms of section 105. And probably just looking at the section as it reads, request there the identification of causes, the unsafe condition, procedures that contributed to the accident, and also the recommendation for preventing the accident. And we quite happy with the scope, because it's really good with what you want to know and understand to come up with the corrections. We had a look at it, and it follows similar sort of requirements under Section 60, the investigations that inspectors conduct. That report is detailed in the legislation what scope it needs to cover. And then there was a question as to when do inspectors come in? I mean, one of the points I've always been trying to demonstrate is that Section 60 deals with government investigation. Section 11.5 is an employer investigation. And effectively, we tempering with the employer investigation to know what's happening. But other than that, the very same investigations are taken care of in terms of Section 60. However, the Act makes provision that inspectors can be involved in the 11.5 investigation when there's a need. Because on the government side, it's always a resource issue, resource allocation issue, with the number of investigations that have to be done. So there is that provision in the Act. And then Section 20, I think there was a request to understand exactly how it reads, the insertion. While Shelley is looking at it, I'll just look at the other question that Honorable Smith raised around issuing fines and whether we have a system or a process. The way I understood it is that we have internal business processes that will ensure that we are able to deal with the problem. We've identified that as one of the risks. I mean, the current system, one of the problems is that people who are issuing this fine sometimes are not necessarily legally trained. I mean, technical staff engineers, mechanical, electrical, mining engineers who issue this fine, and the appeals, when they come to me, more often technicalities of law than the substance of what really happened. And so internally, we started developing the internal business processes that would guide inspectors in carrying out their work. I think currently it's about 7, if not 8, around inspections, how do you do an inspection, how do you prepare reports, inspection 54, fines. So we've developed those internal business processes, which create consistency and minimize come back in dealing with matters. And then Principal Inspector Babuse would probably assist us with a question around post-traumatic stress and how dealt with and the exit medical.
Thank you, sir. With regards to post-traumatic stress, actually, what I can say is that if ever it is being addressed, it's not specific as such. Because normally what happens, for example, if I told them it's a serious accident, for example, where there is an instance where, for some reason or other, somebody is stepped down, and cannot come up, maybe, and is there for about 5 to 6 hours. There isn't anything with regard to, you know, our Act, which says that kind of injury, which is more psychological and not actually physical. There is actually nothing specific in the Act that addresses a particular section. You would find that, for example, also like Mr. Ghazi was alluding to the fact that there are certain issues. For example, you sit in an inquiry where there is a fatal accident and where a person died and there were other employees around him. What would happen is that we would stop the area that, you know, the people should not, employees should not go there until we have done an in-loco or a site inspection. And after maybe 3 days or so, the employees may have to go back into that area. Now, I must say that really with regard to that, we use again our own you know, discretion in terms of that, to say that employees, especially those that were working there, and even, in respect, even those that are not, that were not working there. I mean, I think it is quite human, really, that when you know that people died or somebody died there, that you wouldn't want to go there immediately. But our act doesn't actually address that. But we know for a fact that, you know, that there's need for us for that to be addressed. But if there's nowhere else, this is not addressed anywhere else in our act. But maybe when one looks at, for example, Section 30, which talks about the appointment of the occupational medical practitioner, the intent there is that that person with that specialization should be able, in effect, to uplift those. So, but in terms of the act itself, when we talk about this, there isn't actually such anything that addresses it. In terms of the exit on employees, with the exit medical, what it addresses there, I mean, it is specific. When an employee gets employed at a mine, there are certain specific medical examinations that must be conducted. And that must be, this must be related to the type of job that this person is going to be doing. And then there is, risks are identified so that at the end of the day, when you come on board, already we have, it has been picked up, you know, the kind of, you know, the whole person, how are you, what diseases or what incapacities do you have? And, but of course, the intent of the act also, it doesn't mean that if I don't, maybe I may come in. I'm just not just sort of broadening it so that you must understand, because it can also be discriminative. If at all we say that when you come on board, if at all maybe you don't have this, then you cannot come on board. There can always be something else that you can do with that incapacity. But in terms of the exit medical, you cannot actually be dismissed because of a disease that you have. What happens is that the exit medical actually captures it. You've got an entry, if I may call it that. You've got an entry medical. And also when you leave, you must have an exit. And that exit will have what you had when you entered and will also have what you could have, you know, collected once you were exposed in your work area. And this exit actually, what it gives you the history of everything that the person has. So there's actually... the act makes sure in that way to make sure that you are not going to be dismissed because you are incapacitated. That's what I can say as far as I'm concerned is that the reintegration, that is actually a problem, the reintegration of a person that has been incapacitated in the workplace. That most of the operations, most of the mining houses, I don't know, I'm speaking about like Mr. Gazi was saying, I'm from a very small region, the Northern Cape. Most of them actually do not have, a person comes in and when that person has lost his hearing or has incapacitated in some way, he is not reintegrated into the system. And that person gets lost because there's nowhere else where this person gets. And the act is not clear in that regard. It's quiet, it's silent in that regard. So,
compliance. We don't say that in an event, maybe you can say it's covered in the Workmen's Compensation Act. If it's not covered, to what extent it's not covered. But that may not be our evidence. if you want to cover it, you have to insist that it has to be stipulated in the act, such that we are in a position to explain our intentions. But I thought that was an initial intent to make sure that you put measures and mechanisms in place, such that mine owners should take responsibility. Because in an event of non-compliance, there are very serious consequences on everybody who's working there. Actually, if you don't comply, not only the worker, it is the owners and everything. So that's the intention. So the state law advisors said that they will assist. Is there a way in which we can resolve this problem at the level of drafting? Mama.
Thank you, Chair. I thought I'd first try and outline this in order to give some clarity that the way our government system, be it starting from legislation or when that legislation needs to be implemented, is crafted in a very difficult and not easy way to actually follow through. Because if we look, for instance, on the issue that there was a suggestion on the point of the tribunal and also the question on the maximum and the minimum, when one looks at it and identifies the problem that we are trying to rectify and look at, the system allows each and every party within the process of running the system to play a certain role up to a certain point. Now, the problem we are having is exactly around that when the practicalities of the issues that are faced in the mining industry, for the inspectorate or the department, they can do up to so far. And then from that point again, someone has to come in. And that is because of the system and the way it is. Now, when we look at the issue of the non-compliance and how it happens, as correctly been pointed out, when an accident has happened, it is raised and we look at it. Now, for instance, if there is an issue where death has occurred, there are fatalities, what will happen there? For a criminal process to start, someone has to be identified. You are responsible for this, and then you must take the rest and you must take the whole process through. That cannot be done unless the person is there to be accused for having done something. And that is why we have inquests. Now, the issue from what we are suggesting comes back to the point of double jeopardy. That if we are going to fine the employers, at the same time they might still face the criminal prosecution, and at the end of the criminal prosecution, another punishment comes out of it. They have been punished twice for the same thing. Now, that is why we need to be very much clear as to how far we go, and that is for what and why are we doing that. I think the issue needs to be clarified around there, and we need to have a stand and know exactly this is what we want, and this is the person who can deal with this.
Yeah. Well, I thought I'm understanding this now. It seems like we're complicating it even further. I think the proposal that was made by the department, by our presenter, was that if there's a matter purely of non-compliance, then that is where they are quasi judicial kicks into operation, and the maximum fine there is 1 million. And that point was motivated by Smith, and I think Mahlaba was also agreeing that we do away with minimum, because, which I support also, because, I mean, when you're talking about the second economy, you're talking about one day, I think, Mr. Chair, we should organize an oversight and go and see these small miners. Some in the second economy, some of the people that are there are not there to make real money like big entrepreneurs. They're just there for survivalists. I mean, if Kokwana is selling tomato, pigment trading, tomatoes and onions, she's just there to survive, to be honest, because she's unemployed. And some of these miners that we saw where they still use primitive methods of mining, peg and shovel, you can see they are survivalists. And it isn't like big profit and so on, but I mean, it's something for them because they are not sleeping hungry. They've got an income, whether they are this open cast or so on. But the point is, most of the mines that fall within the second economy will never sink a shaft of half, not even 4 kilometers, but half a kilometer. So these are just unsophisticated, survivalist type of mining. And if you do away with a minimum penalty, you leave in the discretion that if it isn't a lot of money, then the inspectors can decide, use that discretion to determine the penalty. But I'm just saying, I was happy that we agreed that we leave out the minimum, we stick to the maximum of 1 million. But that is for non-compliance. And the inspectors themselves, I thought the proposal was that they will decide if a matter is to be handled by them because it is purely a matter of non-compliance. Or whether, remember, they are there in the field, they understand it better than us. Or whether they think it is too big, it involves death, it must rather go to court. I mean, there's no harm. You don't have to do both. They can decide it is a matter for the tribunal to deal with of the inspectorate because it is non-compliance and the maximum they know is 1 million. Or they think, no, this is not our matter, we'll rather refer it to the court. So there's no trouble, they can decide. We're giving them the discretion. If they think they can handle it, let them handle the penalty. If they think it is too big, it must rather go to the court. Yes, let it go to the court. This is our own court. Everybody goes to court. Everybody. I mean, there's no harm. Is an institution which is a supreme body, and everybody is not above the law. If they refer a matter to the court, then that is fine. I think it was straightforward because they decide where it must go, and they are not double standards there.
Now, maybe the other issue is that you see that the point of this should be encouraging a mine owner take responsibility. There's no way in which you can defer responsibility to the court. Because as soon as you realize that it did not comply, you don't have to wait for the law to judge you. So you say that the responsibility is too fast, mine will also suffer the consequences. Because mines have been doing that. When taking people are trapped there and they come to the risk, they always say that we are going to take responsibility. So the issue is just to encourage responsibility. And other issue should be a deterrent. Double punishment. Just a deterrent. Because that's the magnitude. The mine is far bigger because it makes far bigger profit, maximization of profit. So we're just simply saying, we are threading far carefully into this issue. So I said that we can correct this.
No, Chairperson, I think we've not agreed on anything. I can hear Honorable Kekana saying that it seems as if we are agreeing on something. We haven't agreed on anything. I would recommend that this point in question, we just park it for now. We need to have a special attention given into it, especially looking into what are we talking about. They are better exposed as to whether really the funds that have been imposing all along, has it been working. And if we can get we need more information on what is happening on the ground in terms of administrative or fine. From there, we can be able to see whether really are we cracking our heads on something that is working, because maybe there was that 200,000 maximum. Maybe there's not even one person who's ever even paid that amount. We might be arguing on something that will not even be executed. That's why I'm saying, maybe let's give it special attention. We're no more in a hurry because we're closing on Friday or tomorrow. We still can have time, but we need to do justice because it is not going to come back in a year or 2 years. Especially so that we can be able to be informed better rather than just looking to this without any substantive information as we're asking some of the information. That's the first one on that one. Maybe we may include one or two others that will need a similar attention. Probably we'll need 1.5 hours with the department. Sometime we'll have enough time, probably from Monday onwards.
Okay, any more input? I don't know where we are after this.
I think more responses
are expected from the department.
Chair, I think we've covered all the issues that were raised, and we undertake to prepare additional information on the fine, and when we come again.
Chair.
Okay. Is it a follow-up or a new question?
No, I wanted to add to the investigation. The issue of investigation, probably we can also add as part of what will be discussed together with that one, where we look into Section 60 and Section 11 and look as to those requirements and so on. Then we can just deal with that, those two. Thank you.
Sorry, because I've been having some small interactions with the state law advisor and the parliament. I wanted to find out if the skills issue which you cried about yesterday, if you have addressed that or you have found a solution, and also the resource, funding resource that you also cried about, if you have addressed that today. So these are some of the issues. That they would like you to come back and tell us how are we going to be able to deal with that, because those are critical components of what faces you as a challenge to address some of the safety issues. Because you are dealing with a situation where employers, even when you try to get expert inspectors, they simply poach them. So these are some of the things you wanted to tell us, because you were saying that without addressing these things, even this amendment is useless, unimplementable. So tell us what have you come out with now. There is also Honorable Smith, wants to add.
I don't want to be some clever, but I think if the department comes up, you know, I suggest that they also look at the interaction, you know, work-related injuries, diseases, the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act, the Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works Act. But that would help us put it in a bigger picture as the interaction, because some of these acts, I'm sure, relate to the Department of Labor. So we don't expect a dictation on it, you know. Just an indication of this is the act and this is what it deals with. This is how we have the right in terms of this Mine Health and Safety Act. So how do they relate to each other? Because I was honestly, until quite recently, not aware of the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act. I still don't know how they interact and what the interrelation is of these two or three or four acts, you know, with the Workmen's Compensation Act. So, you know, if you really want us to understand and assist you, we need to be able to say, these are the number of acts, this is how they interact, and this is how your contribution can assist us in terms of the Mine Health and Safety Act for our own benefit. You know.
Yes, I think in addition to what Parashmit is saying, I was reading about mining diseases that emanate as a result of mining. And there's I've got one of my encyclopedias that is dealing with the diseases. And I just wondered, because I've never heard any of you, and they are going throughout the world where mining has happened, these diseases have been there. How other countries have treated those diseases. Now, I have never heard anything here mentioned about them. I don't know, maybe they don't occur in the mines of South Africa. But of course, it covers that disease that occur, disease that occur in the mining industry and the mining activity. I don't know. I haven't read the details about how, where they come from, but I was reading the different kinds of them, and I've not heard how being addressed in our case. I'm sure these are some of the things that need the workshop that we're talking about. Maybe they only occur in some regions of the world and so forth and so forth. But we need to because you see, that book that I'm talking about is the most recent international encyclopedia on many things on energy and mining. And so it does not take things that are obsolete, so it's dealing with things that is. It's been published in 2003, 2004. So I do not know how relevant to deal with all those kinds of issues and see how our legislation can cover some of those eruptive possibilities. But there were things that we discussed about it. I want to understand how much you've addressed.
Yeah, I think when we come back, certainly incorporate the issues that the honourable members have raised and look at the disease and what is happening. We covered it to some degree yesterday, and then we'll seek for more information and just bring it forward. On the capacity issue, presentation I've made yesterday. Was indicating the proposal that we were putting before the committee with this legislation. Because currently when you look in the department, the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate is a branch, part of the six problems that exist in the department. And the section 47 that was looking at the reintegration of the inspectorate and the council was not taking the inspectorate away from government. Clearly, when you look at the legislation, the whole chapter 607 deals with ministerial powers relating to health and safety, and the chief inspector is accountable to the minister of the department. So clearly now, that proposal, all it was going to, what all it's doing is to give the inspector flexibility to deal with the problem. Because currently, government departments are not set up to do training at a scale at which skills are needed in this country. You know, when you get a budget, it's allocated to specific line issues. In fact, what I've done, I went to the departmental head and said, can we use some of our savings to train people? And you basically have to go to the national treasury to really do that. Because when you allocate this money, you can't, we're not using our post. But in reality, you can't use that money for anything. It's allocated for post, and that's it. So the thinking was that, and we've had discussions with National Treasury, and they were quite keen with the proposal as it is in the bill, because their sense was that your current budget allocation, then you have flexibility to train. We've started programs with Rest University, with Goldfields Academy, but the problem is the sustainability of those things, because government departments are not set up to train to run learnership programs. we certainly attempt to do those things, but the structure we're not set up to do those things. So that was the thought that will advance and deal with the skill challenge.
I think I'll disagree with you. You see, they are not designed for that, but it is upon the department itself, various divisions, to identify what they need, and at the beginning of the budget year, then they submit a budget, a very well worked out business plan. I'm talking about something that has occurred already. I mean, one project of that kind. During the State of the Nation address, then the minister allocates budget, and he said, actually, I'll give you a very good example, CBMR. CBMR is always budgeted because they submit the business plan and they give it to the treasurer or relevant people, and every time the Minister of Finance and people announce the budget of CBMR, you see. PPMR being a research project for now, because it's not really for working thing. A research project is all that thing, a budgeted for the laboratory. They put everything that they are going to train students, they are going to train people like that, and it gets budgeted for. And so it is upon the department or the division concerning the department when it feels especially like yours, to say in one given year like now as we are discussing with us and say we want this is the build up and construct a business plan of how you want to have the training, funding, resource and everything and submit it so that it becomes part of the ministerial budget which next year is budgeted for, it has gone through all the necessary channels in the cabinet and it gets there approved. And the minister, once you've given it, it can happen. Nothing, it doesn't happen. And I've even seen now, I was reading yesterday, that, CSR have got a number of these Section 21 entities which have been budgeted in the same fashion. You go to Beaufort West, you find them in Eastern Cape, they belong to CSR. They did business plan, they gave it to the Minister of Science and Technology, and they took them to the cabinet, and they were approved, they are budgeted for. Some of them are pilot projects for 5 years. Some of them actually we in the Department of Science and Technology, in the Portfolio Committee of Science and Technology before, we felt that some of those projects were totally useless because they were totally not delivering, they were not helping the communities out. But they were there, budgeted for. So you can budget them for it as long as you submit necessary plans in good time.
Maybe just sharing our experience, because we've done exactly that. I mean, a year ago, we developed a human resource development plan to deal with the challenge of the inspector. And that's precisely why I'm saying government departments. I think institutions we prefer to a sort of public entity. We put the proposal to National Treasury. They said it's a good plan. And last year they gave us 500,000. They said it's a good plan, but start and see how it's going to work. 500,000. And this year, again, they've given us another 500,000 to run those type of programs. And when you look up, my first day when I presented, I said we have 82 vacancies. Technical technical position, and it takes 4 years for somebody to get the degree, another 4 years, even 2 years to get the certificate, another 2 years, almost 8 years to get the person to that level. And we've got people in the pipeline, but the numbers are very limited because of what we could get through the very process that the chairperson is suggesting. So that has been done, but we feel it's inadequate in a short and even in a long term. So that has been done.
I think the problem you did not, it means the business plan was not adequate. That is all that I said. Because If you simply submit a business plan alone, it doesn't mean anything to treasury. You have to budget for it and budget meaningfully. That is, with the treasury reads and understands. I'm talking about, we've budgeted something in a project that we're talking about. It's a government project, but it's an entity like this. We talked, we discussed between NRF, the Science and Technology Ministry, and we budgeted for a project which is going to be an interventionist project like the ones we are talking about. And it was budgeted for in a budget speech. And it has got a program of 5 years. And it is there, the money is even for personnel, just like you, the money is of the department. So I think it does happen if you give it a proper, if you get it, get proper people to do it. Budget money, budget everything, everything is substantiated, why you need this money for that and so forth. It does. Instead, the skills, in fact, you're in a very important sector ourselves. Well, what you have mentioned to the committee, I just thought about this point. I think it means that you do not have correct people to put this thing together, to take it to the treasury, because to us it makes sense what you are saying, but it does not make sense why the department will not have money and all the resources that you need for it.
No, Chairperson, I think the issue of the skills, especially in the inspectorate department, might be added there, because if you remember, there was an indication that they are very thin on the ground and they don't have people with the same expertise out there, even if they would advertise. But there is a need. I've just heard recently the Minister of Health coming up with a program which would be like intervention in the shortage of skills, where they've got a program. I think it was introduced in a certain university this week. Some of those things need to be brought in. Maybe there could be some people, certain skills, who could be given short courses to bring them up to speed. For instance, if you've got an engineer who's available, but it doesn't have the relevant expertise as you would need, probably take those people through a certain program. Over the time, they would end up bringing the level that is expected. But the one that I wanted us to deal with before we can forget is slide 3. The proposal to suspend dismissal pending appeal has been incorporated in the bill. My request was, then can maybe they put it up as to how they put it in, so that we don't only meet with it when we are to make the approval and we start kicking it out and we make a lot of amendments. I think that one got left out in the response. But I think after that, we're almost done. We'll meet in another day. The chairperson will see probably next week.
On the issue of skills, I also wanted to ask a similar question, the question being, at the national level, how are we interfacing about? You see, we get information from all circles and so on. Say, for example, in Giza, in Askisa, sorry, in Askisa, and Gipsa. There in Askisa, they identify, but Gipsa then specializes with skills. Then they specifically said that the country needs, say, for engineers, technicians, and artisans. Engineers, they need, we're producing 500 engineers a year, we need to produce 1,000. And there's a program there, I think they call it Engineering Task Team, which also involves the South African Council of Engineers. And in that program, they outline how they are going to produce. They say 1,000, but they think they can produce 2,000 a year within the next 5 years to address this single skills shortage. Now, I'm saying this because they mentioned about recruiting engineers from South Africa who went overseas, those that are on pension and want to come back and train in new ones. It's a very intensive program, actually. But they think in 5 years we can be producing 2,000 engineers per year. And the requirement is 1,000, so we'll produce even more than.
Now, the point is, you read this thing, very important documents of government like ATCISA and CHIPSA, and ultimately, you get a presentation from you who needs skills, but it doesn't touch, you know, on what is happening nationally. I would say, look, I would want to hear you saying, we're trying to train our own engineers or upgrade those that we have, but from national government, from our Department of Education, because they are the main people, or from this task team, they are supplying us, at least they've started to supply. Now, if ASCISA talks about this, and you come, you don't even mention it, and these are the skills that you need, you just wonder how much impact is this national program having on our daily operations. I mean, don't you interface, don't you interact with this national, very important national policies of government? I just want to see whether you're fitting in there, because you haven't mentioned a single thing about it. And they promised they'll produce 1,000 engineers, even 2,000 engineers per year, which is what the country requires.
Which is not possible, Jeff. Yeah.
Can you switch off his
mic? That was about.
Well, the question of skills, I don't think we can get into it because it's very complicated for this level. We already touched upon it. We have tried, I have even in Parliament together with the HSRC, it didn't work. So it's not really a problem of skills per se. We may not be having the skills that are needed. For instance, for 2010 estimates worked out from researchers that we need about 65,000 engineers. But at least we do have a lot of engineers idling here, not working. So it's not about the even the ones that we have, we're not utilizing them. Here we're sitting in Parliament with all new engineering specialization. So I'm trying to say that we do have skills. There are many of them. Actually, they can, as I said yesterday, you don't need many engineers for PhD to make a difference in one company. You just need one person who is good in research in that particular field, and then he then teaches others. You don't need that. 1 million people to take a person to the moon. Only need one PhD who understand astronomy to take people to the moon. So we have got a lot of quality people who can make a difference as well, I think. So I don't want us to therefore engage in that, because you see, if we get into that level, it becomes very emotional because we are wasting time. We must just talk about other things. Skills development, we need to do it because it's not enough. But the first thing is to culturalize ourselves, that when we have the skills, we have to use them, and how to use them, and where to use them. We can't just keep on. Because, you know, I can tell you, NRF has got a PhD program to produce 15,000 PhDs in 5 years. But where are they going? We're asking them in one of the seminars, where are they going to go, because there are many PhDs already idling. Where are those ones going to go when we produce them? Because we must first identify where we are going to fit them and how. So that is, those are socio-economic, political questions that you have to address before you engage in a program like that. Because you can produce quite a number of youngsters who have finished engineering in technical. And those are practical engineering courses where you can, after finishing a technical, you can even use them practically because they are trained practically. But they are idling. You do not know how many CVs I've received from people who are in science and they just, can you put these students somewhere? So it's not about that. So I don't want us to discuss things that are fruitless. I think we must discuss things that are helpful in this field for now. So what is helpful now is that you are running short, you have a problem of skills, you have a problem of funds, and these are the things we should be discussing, how to, at least for this bill, to address them. But at national level, I don't think it needs a different platform to do. I think at this juncture, I think I've exhausted your time. I think you have responded.
There was one question from Honorable on question 20. Can you repeat?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. The request was to indicate how did we, the wedding that we proposed is to capture the concerns that we have worked on the bill throughout the night yesterday, and we put it in the bill, but we didn't put it up on screen. The intention is to polish it with the state advisors and then be able to submit it. But I can read it out in the numbers what we had intended or what we're proposing. It will be an insertion in section under section 20. It will be a new subsection and subsection 7, which would read as follows: an employee who is entitled to an appeal in terms of subsection 1A may not be dismissed by reason of that employee's unfitness to perform any category of work until the appeal process in terms of this section has been exhausted. And it go on to indicate basically to. Because we still thinking that perhaps the wedding can still be reworked and polished to ensure that we get exactly what we intend. And we're still going to check that with the state law advisors, and then the bill will be submitted to your committee.
Any further input from members?
Just a lot of time for it.
Well, I think we can have a break, therefore, and I think this session we will adjourn it, but you need to talk to me before we leave about your request. And we will adjourn the session, but the members must remember that we have to form a forum to look into. They are bringing the advisor, law advisor, they are bringing that energy bill for tomorrow for that more technical correction. And we have to agree here before. They said it's there already, said it. Right now, it's not a, it doesn't mean because you only need to remove that particular question you covered in the next process. But they will explain you after they come in.
Okay.
Yeah. They don't come in yet, just now.
When are they going to do that, Chair?
There's some small correction they are going to do
now.
In this area now. So I'm requesting members that they, in fact, they said, because I said this session is to end at 1 o'clock. But I said it's better that they come here at 12:00. But I think now we must tell them that we are ready.
Yeah, they must come now.
That is the case, and the three-day rule must be applied.
No, there are three. Yeah, we are not. It's not a change of the field. It's just a correction.
Not the change of the bond.
Yes, it's not a change of the bond. Yeah.
That's
an error.
Technical,
we'll argue with them when they
come. Yeah, we'll argue with them when they come.
Yeah.
They are coming here. That's why you have to be.
It's another couple of technical things.
Oh.
I know you are rule driven. I know.
The lunch is already outside. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can have lunch.
No, we made amendments during the debate, remember?
Same. Oh, no, you didn't know, and it goes to the NCOP.
Okay.
We have French Day.
No, it's fine.
We have a study group.
That's it.
And I thought you were going to look at...
Opa.
French Day. French of NUM Day.
Yeah.
He said we must have a study group too, because there's all of a sudden all kinds of...
So when are we going
to find a doctor study group and this afternoon at
5:30?
Where?
Fred will come there, isn't it?
Fred.
Where is the study group?
Yeah, let me just check it.
Can I just quickly give something to the
I'm going to get some. 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 I'm
Fiji.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Tinto.
But I eat like a sissy like you, but when I am not eating, I'm ugly. In other mind, I'm going to go to the house. I'm going to go
to the house.
I'm going to go to the
house. I'm going to go to the house. I'm
going to go to the house. I'm
Huh?
You want to go and see the mine?
The what?
Small scale mine.
Yeah. Oh, when you go to interest in that, when people go to buy rich, I'm a billionaire.
Go back to the mine. You want to go and see the small scale miner?
No. No, I'm there. I'm still to.
We're back going to the slab.
Go for that. Don't get dry. You're just one and done. I meant all I'm getting in love.
But you see, you buy Brazil, you are waiting, you are born in Brazil.
You mean they cannot afford? $5,000.
No, yazi ukuthi
bamainani labantu
kasi. No, survivalist.
You know bathini?
Bathele imali.
Don't think because kuthiwa mining bafana no open them. No. Baya survivor nje. Diamonds, small diamonds.
No, give the
diamonds is not worth it out of the encane kanjani.
Iwe tamalini.
Our concept in mind, Mabuto Mundun and Manchester with him, Milode.
Can't
you
in the mind?
But that's the point.
In the mind,
what's the point? Only a mine.
No, these are small mines.
How small are they?
Yeah. They're very small. Hey, when I was talking, you could know.
You must come to my province, you will see there is a thing called small mine.
Yeah.
Let's explain to them.
How much is that small mine worth?
Getting one diamond in 6 months.
Yeah, bro.
They're really, okay, you must come and see.
Get the woman.
But those who just spend 15 cents.
No, those are not small miners. Those are informal miners.
No, that's not.
You can't be saying that you are formal using a wheelbarrow and a sieve and you're saying that you are formal. We talk about informal training here.
No,
you don't even write down.
No, once you are registered, then you are
formal.
Immediately you switch to TV2, then there's a problem.
Remember, go back to KwaZulu-Natal. Then
the only thing that we know in case that ends is that if you don't hear well, I just give you a shambo.
You're
cool, like so critical.
You're
Yeah, if not, so I'll send my bed to you.
Hello?
Hello? Okay, okay. Treating you like a king.
Yeah, the moment is my conversation with the community. Yeah, but both of them are the same. You see, we can. You might think that you can.
Where is Mr. Mahlaba?
Honorable members, we just want to address something that I've noted that it's not what we had agreed about. I think something was probably some kind of misprint or misunderstanding of what we meant. But if you open a page of the bill, energy, national energy bill, page 9. Just give those members that don't have the bill.
Page number what?
In the draft, in the final draft, it will be under page 21 under transitional provisions. Otherwise, in the expire, in the bill itself, it will be page 9. Yeah.
Page 9.
The concern is on clause 13 under transitional provision, which we think has got to be reformulated and recorded. 13.2a. If you recall very well, members, we agreed that NEMIA should be NEMIA, that agent that they were establishing, we said that it should be done away with because SANEDI was fulfilling all the role that NEMIA was fulfilling. And then we said, then we agreed with the department when they came to propose that SANERI, NEIA, which is National Energy Efficiency, and the renewable energy will now form part of the divisions of SANEDI. But SANEDI goes beyond even them. It's going to be also looking at modeling. Other than that, it's going to be collecting data. It's going to be doing integrating the energy between fossil fuel-based energy and nuclear energy. Going to be doing all those kinds of things about our energy system. So it's going to actually look into the integrated plan of our energy system. But we agreed with them when they said that the three divisions, the renewable energy and the SANERI, which are the standalone entities, they will all fall under SANERI. But if you look, and then we said, if you look at that, and they are saying there, which it is saying now that clause 13.2a, it says the person who immediately before that date occupied the office of chief executive officer of SANERI is deemed to be the chief executive officer of the South African National Energy Development Institute and continues to hold that office without any interruption for the remainder of the period for which he was appointed as the chief executive officer of my name. That's what we agreed. Because SANERI, and SANERI is a subdivision of SANERI. Mm-hmm. So he can't, in fact, there are three divisions. There is SANERI, NEA, which is National Efficiency Energy Agency, and then it is the renewable energy, which they said is now going to be a standalone in itself, which before was said to be under SANERI. Then it was said that so these will now form, they want to, the renewable energy to also stand alone, and so there will be three immediate divisions that will fall under SANERI. So the question is, we couldn't have agreed that SANERI CEO is going to be the SANERI CEO. What about the CEO of energy phase, what about the CEO of a renewable energy, whatever the case may be. So it doesn't make sense that because Saneri is only a research division, which was a research on energy, whereas Saneri has been established in this field to look into the whole energy integrated plan, including renewable energy, including Saneri, including national energy efficiency. So that is where they have put and clause which I do not know what just be that in, you know, to say that it automatically becomes the rate of Saneri. So that's the irregularity that has been done. Nothing.
But how?
Now, what did the state law advisor when the parliamentary advisor is? Is just that because if you look at the following clause after that, the B, it says now, correctly so, it says, the person who immediately before that date constituted the personnel of Saneri and of NEA, I think that's what we had agreed about ourselves. It says that the persons who immediately before that date constituted the personnel of Saneri and of NEA are deemed to be the personnel of the South African National Energy Development Institute without any interest. That is what we said. That is what we remember very well. Because then the person who, according to the ministerial thing, will be appointed as Saneri, then is the one, if he feels that the Saneri CEO must be the manager of that division, it is fine. If the minister, but we, this is what we expect ourselves. The formation of Saneri with these institutions under Saneri and the bigger mandate of Saneri, and then we said that, well, all the people who are in Saneri or these other, then they remain in the employ there. But those divisions will be falling under Saneri. That's what we said. We didn't point out that. In fact, in a bill like this, we can't make appointments. You see, because this is like an appointment that we are saying that this one is appointed to do that. But so that is the correction that we think has got to be.
So just for clarity, yeah. Who is then the CEO of Saneri?
No, the CEO of Saneri has got to be appointed by the minister or whoever. Because this we said, we made it a point that this institute will be centrally accounting to the minister. Yeah. So the minister will appoint the CEO. If the minister feels that Saneri CEO is supposed to be the head, it's fine. Then that is a ministerial discretion. But we can't put it here in the light. That is it, because it's not right. Honorable Masha.
No, Chairperson, I think this is just straightforward. You know, they're even putting for the remainder of the period that we don't even know. How can you approve something that we don't even know? The conditions of that person's employment, maybe they could be saying something contrary to that. I think it's just straightforward that we were here to amend the bill, but the bill did not have this appointment. And these are just formalities that will be dealt with by the relevant people. Because really, if somebody else can challenge this, to say, as a committee, how did we choose this one against that one? What would we say? And we don't even have the right to deal with such matters.
I say, Mr. Chairman, are you saying that we should omit that act?
Yes, exactly. But we have got exactly what we want.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think while some is agreeing, maybe the law advisor should tell us if the process, is this process correct?
Yeah.
So if the process is correct,
can you quickly the comment?
And I was going to say that maybe the other member should be notified of the omission of this here, because it's going to start an unnecessary debate. We to clarify it.
Yeah, they should clarify it.
So thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I've looked at the rules. The rules of the National Assembly. In terms of rule 251, subsection 3 or subsection 3, it says that if the committee considers a redraft and it rejects any clause in that redraft, it must just indicate on the committee report that it has rejected that clause. So, according to us, that's
then be in accordance with, if it's indicated that the school is now located in accordance with the rule. And I would put forward to members a proposal that the other members be notified that of this omission.
Yeah, that's it. Any further input?
Chair, I thought the state law advisor was going to advise us as to whether it is correct for us to remove that clause from the
According to that, the rule that she has quoted, that if it is read after, we can remove a clause that will fill it and advise and simply advise members that this clause is removed because not to
I just want to make a proposal that we accept the removal of the clause stating 2A because 13.2B addresses what we want.
Chairperson, and then after that,
speak here.
After that, then the three-day rule must apply.
Let's
then you are properly covered.
Let's take this
out. Must apply. Because you delete a clause, which means you are also going to change the numbering thing. And this was adopted. Now, we do have a quorum to pass it, but the course of the bill will be tomorrow. It will then mean that it must apply to say that the three-day rule must be
waived.
Thank you. That's it. There's nothing else in it. There's but this is just according to the rules.
What about the three-day rule if it's where it means that it shouldn't apply?
Because this is within 3 days before the debate, you see.
Because we still have on Thursday we have 3 days.
So we have to apply for it.
Thank you, I think the problem that we're sitting with now is that the sorts are formally before the committee. And the other option that there is to propose this amendment to the assembly, and then they include it in the bill.
Good.
It's an easy way out.
Yeah.
I'm saying the problem that we are sitting with now is that the bill is not formally for the committee now. It's now for for the second reading. Now, in terms of the rules, the amendment can be proposed to the assembly, and then they can consider it, and they can make do what was requested, or they can reject it.
Okay. Let's allow that honorable law since the program.
It will then, if we go that route, it will then be correct in the NCOP. In the NA, that is to say that what you did last when you in fact highlighted amendment.
That's a very long route to take because even now NOP has rejected that said that the department can't be we can't have always the problem where the department makes mistakes and then we try to cover it. They said it must be taken back to the department. It must do as it was supposed to do. And that is very bad for us. And that is what would happen. And now, since they are still angry about it, that means that they will be even more angry now.
If I may, from my understanding and what could possibly also be done is to how I came here with understanding was that this clause
was not the committee's understanding when they deliberated or debated on this thing. So how it came in here, how we, maybe just, I don't know. But if we take it out, and the basis that we can take it out is that, look, there was an agreement that this isn't one of the clauses, so we basically we can just ask for a reference because it's like a redraft. It's not an amendment that we're making, so we just, when we ask for a reprint, we just leave it out. And we don't have to, you know, do the other things.
No, Chairperson, I was going to say the same thing because we've never had this understanding. And it has never been verbally quoted to us, except in the next one, where we, when it was discussed that the personnel of the two entities are going to be part of the new entity. Now, this is new, where now it is specific to an individual. It is more subjective than objective. And I think I would also go with that one, that we just confront the department to sort this out because it was not there. If they can say it was there, they must show it in black and white. Because we had presentations that they made, but this was has never been there.
And we wouldn't have agreed to it because it is very clear and straightforward that we couldn't say that Neri, a CEO, must become the automatically that it couldn't have been asked.
No, we are just trying to get an easy way out of here. So we just want need a reprint. Don't use all the excuses that you could. We had no understanding. Because when I read it at some point, I did get that understanding. But not that we agreed on it. So we didn't challenge it. So it's an omission on our part. So the best thing is to just say, order for a reprint. And if it's done, then we can debate the matter. Because the other issue is that you are going to be bogged down with all the technicalities and you can't even do the work. Because it will mean we should wait for 3 other days and next week we can deal with it. Because today is Wednesday. So if we debate it tomorrow, it's fine. But how feasible is the reprint? Will we, by tomorrow, we shall have attained the objective. Shall we have managed to reprint it tomorrow?
Chairman, yes, I believe that is one way you could do it. But one of the things you'll have to do is you've got to get rid of all these. Because otherwise it becomes a huge problem. If you have a reprint, it would be something that... but if I come out and I say, well, what is this? Yeah, it starts a major, major problem.
Now,
all this all this we can even sit tomorrow morning with a full component of the meeting tomorrow morning, but and in fact delete this section, pass it formally, and let them. The only thing here is what is key here is your 3-day rule, the way for the 3-day rule. That is the only one. I don't see anything else. I mean, if it's for a full meeting tomorrow morning to sit and agree on it, that's it.
You can have it now.
Then I'm always sleeping if that cannot be done.
Let's hear what
I think you think what we need to understand is that the bill is not before the committee at the moment because the report has been published before the House. So we can't call something back because we don't have in front of us. The best route that we actually possibly can get out of the bill is in terms of 254, where an amendment is proposed. I can't see meeting at the committee tomorrow morning and do the change because the bill is not before the committee because technically the report has been published, it's before the House. So it is the House must decide what needs to happen here and not the committee because it's not before the committee. And looking at Rule 2541, which is after the bill has been placed on the order paper for second reading, but before the Assembly decides on second reading, a member may place amendments to clauses of the bill on the order paper. So nothing stops the committee place that on the order paper and say, this is the proposal that we need to delete clause study from the bill and proceed, because in terms of procedure, that would be the correct, because the other members have the bill, and suddenly we reprint something, and tomorrow morning they sit with the bill that they have, and then there's a big issue in the House, and then that cause disappears.
Yeah.
And procedurally, there will be a correct question then.
Yeah.
But for us to overcome that cause is to proceed in terms of 2541 and propose that amendment to before the Assembly decides, so that we can then procedurally be in order.
So that it make provision for that to be printed on the order paper?
That is
the answer, Chairperson, and I propose closure.
No.
No, that is...
No, way forward now is that you should...
You go and sleep.
Go and negotiate for an agreement. You see, an amendment, it will require... If they say division and a vote on a Thursday, where do you get it from?
No, man.
No.
But we are in the majority. ANC will go with us, so that's fine.
You're right.
I have to
go and negotiate with them and inform them.
Yeah.
Them are who now?
Yeah, the parties, all the parties. Mm. Hello.
You wanted to say something there, Mataba, or you were satisfied with what you did?
No, Chairperson, I'm just saying, you know, this was deliberately done. If you look at page 8, section 11, the board appoints the chief executive officer. But of a sudden, we're changing now, we are making a recommendation of an appointment.
You see, because I don't remember us agreeing to
No, it's fine.
Totally, that's why when I read this bill thoroughly when I was coming down, then I came across this because I don't remember the committee really agreeing to this thing. And we went, you remember, we went sentence by sentence when we did. It wasn't there then.
I think I do agree that the ANC may be in the majority of this, but to have it a smooth passage, I think it's better to negotiate.
Okay.
And if you negotiate it, make it much easier.
Okay.
And we won't have those filters. Okay. Otherwise, some of us will get up and dwell on this point right through the debate.
Okay. No, that's acceptable.
Especially in
the final resolution is that, therefore, whatever the odds that must have happened, we do not have to reopen them because they will also pull us down into another drain.
Yeah.
We just do the correcting the two because we are here as the committee. We agree that if something has happened which was not really of our understanding,
we don't like it.
We will therefore do the amendment, but what I'm afraid of, that amendment, because I don't want to open it to the situation that we are facing presently with MPRK in the MSOP. When that amendment is done, it's not going to cause that. Therefore, MSOP must then have to amend it, whatever. Because if it's
finished with us,
so that it goes to the SOP clean.
Yes.
Because they've complained a lot today. They were very angry about what has happened. And we said it wasn't of our making. It's because of this rushing of this thing. We did it very well, and actually we didn't even know it ourselves at the end that those clauses had been omitted, because we had finalized everything in good faith with the environment. Now we found that those things are not there. They were actually identified by environment ministers, that those things are no longer there. And now that has put us in a very serious situation. And they have said that, no, they are not bringing it back to us. They are saying it is back to the department. Now, I don't know what process is going to take now with efforts like that. But they said to me, so that in the future the department must know that it must be two correct things. You see, when we keep on pushing things, if we bring it to you and then you correct it, they'll keep on doing this thing. Now one day it will put us in trouble. They say we are going to send it back to them because we don't want to. We want when it comes from the department. Then we sit down with all of you, we discuss, we find out if it is now exactly what you said you want. But for now, it must go back to them. That's the That's what they said.
Yeah, the small, the other small point. Maybe the few for future is just how we manage ourselves, that's all. Because when we realize that there are clearing omissions by the department, we realized on the day we're debating. So,
because it was the overnight thing.
Yeah, normally we're supposed to have gone into the COP and also explain. But if you smuggle things, then we make them angry. See, whoever has to consider it in the COP, we have to. A multi-party management and the like. So in future, that's what we need to do when there are flaws.
Yeah. The thing is, they were supposed to meet with them yesterday. Okay. But one of us were coming here to call it. That is, we agreed to them last week. They said they made a date last week. They didn't come themselves. Their mood didn't come last week. Now, this week, they said they are only available yesterday, but this is our public hearing. And so I reminded them that last week we were available, we didn't come. This week we had public hearing to Kudi. And they said, so no, it's fine. Then they will take it back to the department because they were going to be discussing with the department today. That's why they gave us the date of yesterday. But it's not our own making it them because they were supposed to meet with us last week.
Yeah, we close it down.
Okay, I think therefore it's closed. That's how we're going to manage it.
Well, I'm still with my service, you will deal with the management normally. Because when you leave it there,
the
level of
money. You said you could open tomorrow, but half past five. Yeah. What's the venue?
S 12. What is it?
Different institutions are actually giving us a common pattern that you can follow.
I'll attend another meeting.
Time is now 1 o'clock on the dot. Where is the
Pukekana
going?
What
is the Rush and the Hari?
I don't know. The Rush and the
Hari. That is, you look nice today.
Am I
looking nice? Come on. Black and white jacket with, you know.
Ask them, Mama.
And a nice, it's a Playboy. Hi, Danny.
Hey, Danny. You know, I was traveling with him in the bus. And you know what? This man can lie. He's in Pretoria. He says, no, I'm in Cape Town.
And you're sitting in the same bus.
A white lady calls him. A white lady, I'm telling you.
No, man, it could be just a little technical. You know when you are in Pretoria, doing oversight, and you think you are still in Cape Town.
Oh, okay.
So let me continue the picture.